69. Again, with the understanding that we're going to take sub 5 on line 4 and rearrange it appropriately to fit within the bill of the section.
Make it a sub D.
Yeah, section number 1, section number 2 of the bill. Are there objections to those, to Senator Hill's motion? Hearing none, so ordered.
We've completed then the amendments that have been proposed?
We have completed all of the amendments that have been proposed, and I think we have adopted, we have adopted all of the amendments that have been proposed, except the one that's been drawn.
I have a question, as I've been trying to read this thing while we've been going through this process, I found another provision in the bill which troubled me. It's on page 3.
Okay.
And it is line 24, which is a definition of electronic communication. It says it includes any oral communication or any communication which is completely by wire. And I'm wondering what the reference to oral communication means. Does that mean any oral communication? Or does it mean any oral communication which is completely by wire? And if it means oral communication which is completely by wire, why mention it, since it would be included in any? So I'm wondering, and I guess I have to admit I'm suspicious because of some of the other things we've found here, whether this is an effort to get all oral communications defined as electronic communications. Doggone it.
Let's fix it then.
I'm not comfortable just fixing this bill. I don't think this bill has been drawn with any thought of protecting people's rights. I think it's overreaching. We've caught most of the overreaching. I'm not comfortable we've caught it all, because here's another one. And I don't, I'm just not comfortable with this bill.
I think he's right. That bill wasn't drafted with the thought of protecting people's rights, but that's what many of the other witnesses have spoken to. I don't have any problem with it.
Okay, let's talk about the any oral communication. What would happen if we just plain said any communication which is completely by wire, or any communication made through a tone-only paging device?
Can
Senator Brown?
I get reaction from Dale.
Sure, come on up, Dale.
Madam Chair and Senator Shoemaker, Dale Penn from ODAA, I may be misinterpreting your concern on this, but this language is electronic communication is as we have defined it, but then excludes any oral communication or any communication which is completely by wire. See, but does not include sub B, any oral communication. This is language which is directly from the federal statute. There's certainly no intent by us to, you know, dovetail something in here or hide it from you. This is the federal language, and it is the definition under federal law of electronic communications which you may obtain a court order to monitor, but this excludes oral communications.
Was intended to exclude all oral communications or those which are completely by wire?
Excludes any oral communication or any wire communication, because we are dealing with electronic communications that are defined up above. That is what is appropriate for this, and we're specifically excluding oral communications or wire communication.
So this one is only electronic by means of transfer of signs, signals, writing, images, sounds, data, or intelligence transmitted by radio, so that they're taking out any oral communications as an exemption. Or anything by wire, because it's going to be different. They're really talking about the radio communications at this point only. This section deals only with radio communications, right? Is that what?
With electronic communication, as stated there, which is federal law. We basically adopted the federal definition of electronic communication and specifically excluded oral communication.
This is the same, exactly the same language as the federal definition, and the same arrangement?
I'm looking at Mr. Shepherd because he drafted this, but as my understanding, it was our intent to precisely use the federal definition.
Okay.
Madam Chair, Pete Shepherd from the Department of Justice. I hate to confess to drafting this legislation now, but let me say that this is...
Probably is a little risky.
Let me say that this is a direct excerpt from the federal statute, and it is intended to be read as Mr. Penn has described.
It's a little peculiar that you'd put, if it's any oral communication, that you'd couple that in the same phrase with any communication which is completely by wire, because those are two very different concepts. So you wonder then, is it any oral communication which is completely by wire? Is that why you coupled it with the other? And it's just...
Madam Chair, Senator Shoemaker, oral communications are protected by various other mechanisms under the Oregon statutory scheme, and are not protected at all under the federal statutory scheme. And so it was, that definition was included to make sure that they were not construed to be a subset of electronic communications. Likewise, with respect to communications completely by wire, if the senator would be...
Why wouldn't you then have sub B, any oral communication, sub C, any communication which is completely by wire, sub D, any communication made through a tone-only paging device?
Madam Chair, Senator Shoemaker, I think that would be fine. It would accomplish the same thing that I understand the federal language to do, which is in the bill here.
I guess I'd move that as amendment.
Senator, could you repeat that again, please?
On page 3, we'd split this line B on page 24 and have sub B, which would now become sub A because we deleted sub A, right?
Correct.
Be any oral communication, and then sub B would be any communication which is completely by wire, and then sub D would be any communication made through a tone-only paging device.
Are there objections to that amendment? Hearing none, so ordered.
Madam Chair,
Senator,
I'll move House Bill 2469A as further amended to the floor with a due pass.
Chair, may I make a comment before we do that? And I do intend to support this, but I think something happened here with this bill that I think must be commented on. We operate here because there's a certain amount of trust that we have in our relationship, I think, with both the prosecution bar and the defense bar. And it's been a long time since I was troubled by a bill the way that I was with this one. I mean, we've been going along, I think everybody's trying to be fair and balanced, advocate, even in advocating for each of their positions. And I share Senator Shoemaker's concern about this bill. Suddenly we're going along and this one comes up, and I mean, it was so wide open that it was really disturbing. And it took a lot of work and a lot of time on counsel's part, and then the prosecution defense bar to get back together to come up with amendments, and I'm gonna support it, but I guess I want to reemphasize how important it is that we have complete trust in what's going on. And not all of us are familiar with the practice as you all are. And so I just wanted to comment on that, and I just hope that it just doesn't happen anymore. Because once that's, if we're going to be sitting here and going to be suspicious from either side about what's going on, then we'll probably end up with a worse work product because we are not, most of us anyway, are not practitioners, and we don't know. And I just hope you keep that in mind later on, and that's not a matter of, and I'm not trying to point out any particular person or anything, but that relationship is very important for our work. And I just hope that everybody will be sensitive and respect that because we sure do and we need it.
Thank you, Senator Hill. I think that's shared. Uh, We do actually, we do have a motion on the floor with Senator Brenner moves House Bill 2469 as further amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. And I would say we will look it over one more time, folks, and if it's not right or if the words don't seem right, we'll call it back again and check it in again, Senator Shoemaker, and do some reassuring for people to have a chance to look it over once it gets printed.
We're going to get a newly engrossed version to look at before it gets away from us.
I want to pass it out, but before we'll have it before it goes finally to the desk, and we'll look it over carefully and give you a chance to look it over and other folks as well to make sure that what we've done here without a Hannah Gross bill is in fact what we intended, and you'll have another look at it. With that proviso, Senator Brennan has moved House Bill 2469 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Call the roll, please.
Senator Brennan?
Aye.
Brockman?
Aye.
Gramsci?
Aye.
Hill?
Aye.
Shoemaker?
No.
Brenner?
Aye.
Aye. Motion carried. We have one bill remaining. We will come back to finish. And this is House Bill 2325, the massage technician bill that we passed out earlier today. When we changed the hours back down to 333, Mr. Jabe said there was language which we probably need to reinsert, put back in along with that line, which had to do with reciprocity with the state of Washington. So if are there objections to us reconsidering the vote by which we took sent House Bill 3225 out to do pass recommendation? Hearing none, so ordered. John.
Yes, Madam Chair, for the record, my name is John Gervais, representing the American Massage Therapy Association. I wasn't expecting this committee to drop those hours, certainly down where they did, nor below 500. When the Senate Human Resources Committee raised from 333 to 1,000, we no longer had a problem with reciprocity with the state of Washington. Therefore, they automatically dumped out the portion that talked about that. When you go back down to 333, we need that special section that was created by the House Sunset Committee that allows the board to keep track of hours by massage technicians. That would allow them then to have, for instance, in the Tri-County area, reciprocity with the state of Washington, which requires 500 hours for their state license. And this paragraph that your legal counsel has handles that and would provide that remedy that I just overlooked when you did that hours change.
Okay. Thank you. Catherine?
Yeah. Senator, it's just three, it is three lines. It simply specifies the board shall issue a special certificate of achievement to a licensed massage technician who qualifies with 500 contact hours of certified classes, which shall include 330 contact hours prescribed by the subsection, and it fits in quite smoothly as a sub three.
That's the sub three.
It's
section
on
four.
Page three.
Page three. Line, of the A engrossed
bill. Oh, no, wait a
minute.
I'm going backwards. It's on. You have the B engrossed in front of you, so it would be on page three, and it would be inserted on line 31 or after line 30, and it would become a new sub three.
And it is direct language from an A engrossed bill, so it's easy.
I'm sure I'll move that language.
Senator Brennan has moved that language as Catherine has noted. Are there objections to that amendment? And so ordered.
I'm sure I'll move back the floor with due pass with a further amendment.
Okay. Senator Brennan moves House Bill 3235 as further amended by the committee to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Call the roll, please.
Senator
Brennan?
Aye.
Brockman?
Aye.
Gramsci?
No.
Hill?
Aye.
Go on. Aye. Motion carried. Thank you.
Thank you very, very much.
Thanks. Okay. We have our 2282 here, and Springer is going to be back momentarily.
What's the problem?
And I don't know what's happened to Shoemaker, but we'll... Okay. that kind of cool start.
Is Senator Schumaker troubled with this bill, too?
I think probably there were some comments. Schumaker in the building, does anybody know where he is?
Madam Chair, he's in labor. A note was given to him to...
Oh, okay, so
that
he is in labor.
Senator Springer just had to go to a conference meeting.
He'll be back. Well, if they're... I think we do need to wait for them a moment again. We'll see if we can get them pried loose for a while. So, I think the issue is 2282 and... Okay, good. Which is the distribution of the money. And Dave, why don't you go through for the committee while we're, for those of us that are here and interested in the rationale. I mean, I've had drafted A21, which I know you don't like, which puts the money in a trust fund and then it's distributed out. Talk to us a little bit about how the money is distributed in the current bill and why you think that's so important, and get some background here.
Madam Chair, if I may, for the record, I'm Dave Frohnmayer, Attorney General, speaking on behalf of the Department of Justice in favor, at least in these respects, of the bill as it passed the House, which would indicate my opposition to draft amendments number 21. The history of this is really a series of extensive meetings with the House Committee sub-chair, with the House co-chair of Ways and Means, and even a meeting with the governor and the governor's legal counsel concerning various possible options for the distribution of forfeiture proceeds. As a footnote, I would say that the governor told me at the time, and this is now some months ago, that he would not oppose the measure in the form in which it is now submitted to you, although originally the governor's office had explored the amendments that you see in item 21. They were thoroughly explored with the House committee, and it declined to act on them. And I think for good reasons, both fiscal and policy. There is a sliding scale in the bill as it is now proposed, where as forfeiture proceeds increase, a larger amount of those proceeds go into this special fund. That's there for several reasons. One of them is...
Interrupt you and say we're really talking about Section 11B,
okay,
in the current bill, and a A21 amendment, which I've had Jack put together for discussion purposes.
Okay, thank you very much, Madam Chair. I will focus.
Okay, go ahead.
Concluding the first point in the history, the House committee after considerable discussion, did not adopt that measure, and I think for good reason. There is a sliding scale proposal for the reimbursement of law enforcement agencies in the measure as it is presented to you. And that sliding scale was deliberately adopted for several purposes. First of them, it does provide some measure of protection for those of the committee who may have any residual concern about the so-called bounty hunter problem. The agency looking simply to fatten its wallet at the expense of more rational law enforcement procedures. The law enforcement agencies at the upper end obviously do not get any direct money from this, and that's the purpose of the sliding scale provision, is that it is designed to protect and make sure that we do have proper law enforcement procedures. At the same time, and this point is very critical, and I cannot overstate it, but I believe I stated accurately, the measure as it is provided now gives additional funding for narcotics enforcement throughout the state on a statewide basis, primarily through the Oregon State Police. Right now, for its narcotics enforcement program, and I wish to emphasize this, the Oregon State Police does not get $1 of general fund money. The money that is used for narcotics enforcement has come from forfeitures. And I cannot emphasize how critically important that money is, particularly at this present moment. Virtually all of the money has come from federal forfeitures, A small portion of it has come from the state police share of local government forfeitures through their ordinances, all of which now, of course, are suspect in light of the Court of Appeals ruling. Let me emphasize how perilous that funding is, because we know, first of all, if the voters don't pass ballot measure number one in the election coming up, federal law will preclude us using federal forfeitures at all, because the Oregon Constitution currently is dedicated to the Common School Fund. So there will be an absolute cutoff of the federal forfeitures unless that measure is passed. But even if it is passed, the federal forfeiture remedy may not be available to us or to the Oregon State Police forever. There may be a wide variety of federal budget priorities. We have typically found that the turnaround time to get the money back through the federal pipeline is as long as 18 months. That leaves critically poised the question as to whether or not the state police will have any narcotics money, enforcement money available to them at all. I'm sure that the Ways and Means Committee has taken this into consideration, because in our discussions with the House co-chair, I believe we reached a common understanding about the necessity of having this kind of state forfeiture money available through these amendments. And that leads to the final point on this point. And that is that the amendments in proposed amendments number 21 necessarily imply a reduction in present levels of law enforcement effort in narcotics at the statewide level. The reason that is true is that the so-called special fund that the amendments would establish would envision some portion of these monies going for education or prevention or treatment, all desirable objectives to be sure, but they come from the pot of money that right now goes exclusively to law enforcement efforts. So you would see, I believe, a diminution of state police efforts because of lack of resources from forfeited funds used for that purpose if this amendment were to be adopted and if that special fund were to be created. This, in my judgment, is not the time to diminish the effort. The state police have been enormously successful, very inventive, at the same time scrupulously careful of rights as they have engaged in very successful seizure programs. And I would just hate to see a program that we have not even given any general funds at all and have counted on to be supported by forfeiture to be cut back. One final point, Madam Chair, because I know you want to try to keep this whole hearing to a half hour. Some arguments have been raised, and I'm not sure that they've been raised in this forum, but I'll anticipate them in any event, about the so-called bounty hunter problem. That, I can assure the committee to a high degree of certainty, as far as I'm concerned, is not a problem. In fact, it's ironic because at this legislature's direction, probably three sessions ago, our general funds for administering the RICO law through the Department of Justice, our general funds were taken away. And the legislature, in essence, told us that we had to fight organized crime, by and large, through monies and properties that were seized through the civil penalty provisions of the RICO Act and were put in and processed through our RICO revolving fund. I do not know of a single case in which my department has been accused of, let alone guilty of, abuse of that RICO process. We have brought millions of dollars into the RICO revolving fund, some into the Common School Fund, and others into the general fund through this provision. And I'm talking now about judgments that exceed, at last measure that I remember, over $10 million since the RICO law was voted on by this legislature in 1981. So you do have some history. A history, ironically, of legislative direction to use this provision to fund our own efforts, which we have done successfully. The lack of any evidence or even impressionistic accounts of abuse. And finally, on this point, and terribly important to it, and terribly important to the House Subcommittee Chair, Representative Bauman, is that the House provisions in this measure have adopted explicitly an oversight committee. And the explicit purpose of the oversight committee is to bring an independent judgment about the use of this powerful weapon so that it is not misused to trample people's liberties or otherwise inappropriately cause the forfeiture of proceeds. That oversight committee is unique. It's a good idea. We support it. And we think that that provides any possible safeguard that is needed against the sort of notion that the state agencies that administer this law would otherwise overreach with it. Thank you.
That question.
Where in the bill do we find the Oversight Committee?
Section 14, Senator.
Thank you. Is this a staffed committee?
Senator, I believe that the committee membership is identified in subsections A, B, and C of subsection 1.
I see that. My question was whether or not they are, have any funds with which to hire a staff, because without that, I don't see they could do very much.
I'm not aware of any explicit appropriation for staff, Senator. My office, this is gratuitous perhaps, and my business manager may find it that I'm stepping on a limb, but since the Attorney General is a person who appoints this, we would be happy to provide whatever staff work is necessary to assure the functioning of the committee, if there are no other sources for it.
Madam Chair, I have a question.
Senator Brockman.
Sprinkled throughout this, and in the section that we're talking about is, it's also in other sections, destroying firearms. And I just was wondering under what circumstances one, the Attorney General can argue to destroy firearms along with the controlled substances that that were...
Senator Brockman, the expert, not only in our office, but widely recognized national expert, Pete Shepard, is here, and I hope that I can call on him to answer your question.
Madam Chair, Senator Brockman, I didn't hear the first part of your question.
In the section that we're talking about, 11B, and elsewhere in the bill, line 36, it says, District Attorney for the jurisdiction can, with written authorization, destroy any firearms or controlled substances. I just wondered under what circumstances one would destroy firearms.
Madam Chair, Senator Brockman, I believe that the circumstance contemplated there is a firearm that has been forfeited under the other provisions of the bill. And then the question becomes, what does one do with that firearm? This section of the bill would authorize one option, being the destruction of that firearm. The proviso that requires the written consent of the district attorney is intended to protect against the destruction of evidence which might be necessary in the prosecution of a criminal case.
Thank you.
Okay.
No, I didn't want the interim.
I'm interested in the sense of whether people are interested in moving ahead with these amendments in face of the Attorney General who's expressed strident. You know, I don't feel that under 21 amendments. Yeah, and I offer them because I think it's important that we have the discussion. I'm not necessarily interested in upsetting the apple cart at this point. I do think that at some point I would want, when we look at how much money is actually coming in, to move ahead with the 21 amendments next session or some point that seems appropriate to use some of that money for back into the prevention drug area so that we can deal with that. I'm assuming that that question is still going to be open and we look at it in a way that with a fresh look, and that's really where I'm not necessarily interested in stopping or reducing the amount that's, I think that we've made a major push this session, everybody's agreed with it. I'm not interested in sort of diminishing that with an amendment here, but I want to sort of notice that I think I, for one, want to be back here next session looking at how much you've collected. How much is appropriate? How much do you additionally need for funding? You know, I think it doesn't make any sense to have a Cadillac enforcement piece and courts that are drowning and to have our justice system in some equilibrium of funding is what I'm concerned about, and to try to have some equilibrium with respect to preventative. So that's where I am personally, and that's why I raise it. That's why I want to have the discussion before I move on this bill. So let nobody kind of go away thinking that this is going to be here forever and that we ought not to take some piece of this and look at the preventative side when we get into it closely or more closely to figure out what we actually need, because I don't think we should have necessarily a Cadillac piece of one part of the justice system.
Madam Chair. I think you're right, but I'll also say this. you're never going to get an opportunity, I don't think, to extricate these funds from where they're going now unless you do it now, so that's why.
I guess you're right.
If you think you're going to come in and change the flow of this thing in 2 years, I think we're probably not going to be doing that, but I tend to agree with your analysis of it, that it's certainly an area that needs to be examined, but the last thing I would like to see is curtailment of any law enforcement activities or the requirement that they seek alternative funds when they've been getting them from basically the same source.
Madam Chair?
Yes, please.
A couple of quick points. One, there's obviously no objection in this legislature revisiting the question of the distribution of these proceeds after you have some experience in seeing how the bill works, and I think that's entirely appropriate. Bearing in mind, of course, that there is a pour-over provision right now in the measure, that is, law enforcement receives a successively smaller share of the larger and larger forfeiture, so that kind of funding is already available. Second, this is probably not a cornucopia. I mean, the state police have had extremely good success thanks to some very able officers in the field. One in the Grants Pass area has seized personally more than $1 million in the last calendar year or so. But this is the kind of fund that candidly goes in peaks and valleys. You cannot predict and fund stably on a long-term basis a program counting on the fact that you're always going to have $1 million or $2 million or $3 million because you don't really know. Our RICO fund is broke right now. We have zero in our RICO revolving fund, and that's simply because there's a dry period, and frankly, because some of the crooks are getting smart and they don't carry cash around as big quantities anymore because they know there's a RICO law. So we're happy to see you revisit it, and we would appreciate at least the opportunity to have one biennium's experience that you could then evaluate.